Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend's edition, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Throughout the week, boy oh boy, we just continue to put out company updates and market commentary because there's a lot to talk about. There are a lot of companies that are releasing news, and there continues to be this high volatility in a wide range of markets. No matter what you're looking at, whether it's safer assets or more risk on assets, it seems like day after day, you look at the markets and you just don't know which side the volatility is going to be on, whether your favor or going against you. We are going to discuss this as well as a number of other topics, focus more on commodities and precious metals, as we are kicking off the show with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian, let's start off high level. As I mentioned, volatility across the board. It really has been the story of Q1 2022. Volatility and a lot of sectors under pressure, especially those performing sectors through the first half to three quarters of last year. They had a bit of trouble to start off this year. And then we had the war between Russia and Ukraine that popped up that just added to the underlying volatility. Adrian, what's your takeaway? Starting with U.S. equity markets and the volatility and slightly downward pressure that we have seen on the markets, at least early on this year.
Yeah, okay. Well, good morning, Corey and Chad. You know, my feeling on the broad market is, first of all, is the market is very overvalued. And it's not just the high-tech stocks, you know, that were the leaders. It's pretty much across the board. The market is overvalued. And I think increasingly investors accept that it's overvalued. At the same time, there is a sense, first of all, that the Federal Reserve, as it has done so many times in the past, will not let the market drop, you know, the famous Greenspan put that's been there for 30 years now. And the market investors have been conditioned to just expect that when the market goes down, the best thing to do is to buy. And there's also, even though you think the market's overvalued, there's, you know, our friends FOMO and Tina, there's no fear of missing out, and there isn't any alternative. That's the narrative. I don't agree with that. But most of the buying that I see in the broad stock market today, I'm talking broadly speaking, is mechanical and based on sentiment. But it sure isn't based on fundamentals. You know, obviously, gold and commodities, the reasons for the volatility is a little bit different. You know, the war obviously saw things spike up tremendously. And then when we saw, particularly with gold, gold has reacted to the headlines on an almost daily basis. If it looks like Ukraine and Russia might be talking, there might be a ceasefire, you know, gold retreats. If that falls apart and there's heavy shelling in the city, gold moves up. But, you know, it's not unusual. I think we should point this out. It's not unusual for gold, geopolitical spikes in gold to be sharp and short-lived. Geopolitical influences on markets typically don't last a long time. And so when we saw gold rush up on the invasion to over 2050, it really isn't surprising that it started to give a lot of that back. If you look at where we are now, I mean, to me, the strength of gold is shown by the way that it has held support above 1900 and has bounced back quite sharply over the last 2 days. That's a sign of great strength, in my view.
Well, Adrian, yes, it's interesting to look at the dynamics from last year to this year in all those markets. When you look at the general markets, there were signs last year that there was sickness under the surface. When you looked at the breadth indicators, there was a lot of companies making 52-week lows in the NASDAQ and in the S&P earlier last year, but valuations didn't seem to matter, and it seemed like there was only one direction go up, and we've seen that narrative change where a lot of the growth stocks sold off hard over the last few months, even before this year started, starting at the end of last year. And there was a trend to move over into from growth and into value. And value is found in the commodities and the energy sector. It's found in gold, as you highlighted, and it's gotten more of a bid. And gold was getting a bid from the end of last year into the beginning of this year before Ukraine. And as you mentioned, the geopolitical event just kind of spiked the punch bowl a little bit. But are you encouraged in gold that we are seeing a close today in the mid-1940s to end the month of March, but also to end the first quarter? That's the highest quarterly close on record in gold ever today. So we're kind of making history with the, it doesn't seem like a lot after having a bigger move just a couple of weeks ago, but 1940s is the highest quarterly close ever. So is that encouraging to you, I guess, from a longer term standpoint in the precious metals?
No, you hit the nail on the head. It's very encouraging. And I would point out that, as you said, gold was already moving up before the war, before even the heightened tension between Ukraine and Russia. You know, you go back to, you know, the middle of January or the end of January when, you know, gold kind of bottomed. You look at a trend line, we're just right there on that trend line. And so what's happened is that geopolitical premium to a large extent has gone away, but gold has simply gone back to what I'll call its monetary trend line. And I know we're probably going to, well, I suspect we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But even if the war in Ukraine ended tomorrow, I think gold is, and gold would fall at that point, no question. But gold is still very, very powerful just based on, well, based on, forget war, based on inflation, based on the outlook for the global economy, and based on what the monetary authorities are likely to do given inflation in the global economy.
Adrian, can you outline that a little bit more in terms of how much you think gold could fall if this war does end tomorrow? Because quite frankly, even go back to the beginning of the war, which was tail end of February, gold actually isn't all that much higher. It spiked higher immediately after, but has given back the vast majority of those gains already.
Yeah. Well, I think we, as you say, we've given back the we've given back virtually all of those gains, the war gains. But as you know, markets always go to, you know, they swing on a pendulum and they always swing too far one way and too far the other way. So if we had a ceasefire announced, you know, in the next 5 minutes, gold would drop below that, what I've just referred to as a monetary trend line. There's no question. How far would it drop? I mean, I can't see it going much below 1870, frankly, even in what I'll call the best of circumstances or the worst of circumstances for gold. I can't see it going much below 1870. And I really don't think it would last very, very long there before the monetary factors reassert. So I don't think the risk in gold is very high at this point.
Well, Adrian, you brought up the monetary trend line. I think that's a great point. I think people have become so tunnel vision on the geopolitical side that they forgot that we have slowing growth estimates. We've got high inflation, as you noted. We've got the central bank policy where they've started their hiking cycle, not just in the U.S., but in Canada, in Europe. They're looking at it in Asia. So it's really a global trend of hawkish central banks to fight the rising inflation. Do you think that'll continue to underpin a move, not just in gold and silver, but possibly in the commodity sector, as we've already been seeing?
Yeah, and the first thing I say is I would not describe Federal Reserve policy as hawkish, more hawkish than it has been, but hardly hawkish. I mean, we've made the point before. Let's not forget, but if inflation stays where it is, and you have the most aggressive interest rate hikes that the Fed, any member of the Fed, is talking about, and right now we're talking about hiking at every meeting through the beginning of 2023, with 50 points for the next two meetings, followed by 25 points for the next meetings, you are still talking about negative real interest rates. You are still talking about interest rates that are more negative in real terms than they were at the dawn of the 1970s inflation. That's really worth reminding ourselves about. And the balance sheet. I mean, last week, when the numbers came out, the Fed is still adding to its balance sheet. They're talking about, we're going to start reducing it soon. Powell said maybe at the next meeting, and they will start reducing the balance sheet. But as of today, they are still adding. Now, you know that old saying, people say when you're in a hole, the first thing is stop digging. And the Federal Reserve hasn't learned that yet. So even I mentioned interest rates would still be negative when they at the end of another year. If you look at the balance sheet, again, even if you take the most aggressive predictions or forecasts that any Federal Reserve member has made about reducing the size of a balance sheet, it will a year from now, it will still be almost twice what it was in 2020. So this is not a hawkish policy by any means. Hawkish was Volcker coming in and raising rates to 20%. That was hawkish. This isn't hawkish. And the Fed is in a difficult position. I mean, everybody knows this, but I think we just have to focus on it. The Fed is in a difficult position of its own making. We should never forget that. People say to me, what mistakes do you think the Fed is going to make over the next few months? I say, forget the mistakes they're going to make over the next few months. The big mistakes have already been made by putting us in this position. It's simply impossible for the Federal Reserve to raise rates sufficiently to calm inflation without causing a recession. It cannot happen. So sooner or later, the Fed will, in my view, reverse course. Now, I've said before, I don't think that they will back away from higher interest rates at the first sign of trouble because they've got a shred, whatever shred of credibility they still retain is still on the line. So I think, I suspect that they will let the stock market fall and not be too worried about that. But you start getting unemployment start moving up, which is not a concern at the moment. But you start seeing unemployment moving up, and I think the Fed will pivot quite quickly. But they have to choose between letting inflation go or having a recession.
Well, and that really is what this year is all about, right? Or what we all thought it would be about, and that is the Fed, not just the Fed, but other central banks going through a general tightening process, or at least being a little less hawkish from where they were really since the pandemic hit. And we have seen the market start to factor some of this in when you look at interest rates. Interest rates, while still very historically low, have expanded quite drastically, threefold in some cases. We also have seen a flattening, even short-term inversion of the yield curve. But Adrian, how important do you think it is to watch the bond market and see these increasing yields ahead of a slow Fed tightening cycle?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The bond market traditionally is a better indicator of the economy than the stock market. And that's been true historically. And the bond market has finally started to take things into their own hands. I don't think we can yet call them bond vigilantes with rates exactly where they are. Because under the Taylor rule for the Fed, you know, John Taylor was a Fed member, Fed economist, and proposed that the Fed should use a firm rule for guiding interest rates. And under the Taylor rule, Fed funds rate would now be at 12%. So even if you cut that by half, we're still a long, long way from where interest rates should be. But clearly, you know, interest rates, as you know, they move in very long cycles. So we've had 40 years of declining interest rates. in the around the world, and that is normal for interest rates. Interest rates will last a whole generation, typically. So we've definitely seen the bottom in interest rates, and you know, people just don't want to lend money anymore for 0.5%.
Well, Adrian, I think you're spot on there. I think that when we saw those really low rates down around 40 bips in August of 2020, that was probably the top of the bond bubble after a four-decade run. And since then, the bond bubble has kind of burst. And as you mentioned, the bond markets are finally starting to take things in their own hands, maybe not vigilantes yet, but they are starting to front run what the central bank policy is going to be of hiking rates. But as you mentioned, if we were going to implement the Taylor rule, we'd have to have dramatically higher interest rates than what we have now. And the Fed's fund rate would have to be higher than inflation, which at the debt load they're carrying now, which is trillions of dollars, would make the debt servicing on, you know, impossible mathematically. So is there a point where you think that they will reverse course, as you mentioned? And could that be the point that really spikes the precious metals when they finally admit exactly they can't go any higher?
Well, absolutely, 100%. But I think the gold market is already anticipating that. You know, I think we talked about it last time, but the last three times that the Fed has started to tighten, either raising interest rates 2005, 2013, and then started tapering 2015, the last time they started to tighten, gold bottomed the day they actually started. And that's because the gold market anticipates that they won't do enough for as long as they should. It's too little, too late, and it won't last long enough. And in a way, that's what we saw this year. The Fed's been talking about raising rates now since last summer. And that hurt gold because, again, gold typically falls ahead of the start of the tightening program. But, you know, when you saw gold, when you saw the Fed say, okay, next meeting, we're going to do it, we really mean it, then gold started moving up. And when they reverse course, of course, then that will really send gold flying.
Adrian, let's drive down into some of the gold stocks then, because we do have a lot of very active investors that listen and they're trying to manage their portfolio. A lot are, I think, also stuck in some juniors, which quite frankly just haven't been moving, but the majors, they continue to move higher. Newmont just this week was hitting all-time highs, I believe, and it just goes to show that money has come more into the majors and the larger companies, really hasn't filtered down into the mid-tiers or the juniors, no matter what stage of junior you seem to be. Do you think there's still upside in the majors, or do you think it's finally time for money to filter into the mid-tiers and juniors, or do you think it got a little overheated and we might have a little correction ahead of us?
Well, so first of all, it's, as you know, it's perfectly normal in the beginning of a gold market for gold bullion to move up and the senior gold stocks, the major gold stocks, to move up before the mid-tiers and the juniors. That's perfectly normal. In the kind of environment where we are now, remember gold, as Frank Holmes keeps talking about, there's the fear trade, the love trade. Gold reacts. If gold is reacting to fear, whether it's geopolitical fear or fear of the economy, then in that kind of environment, all the more so does bullion move first and the seniors move next. And juniors, which are not really a very good asset to hold if you're afraid of the world falling apart, they don't move typically. They don't move very much at all. Their time will come, don't get me wrong, but it is not, what we're seeing now is not unexpected or what you shouldn't be expecting in this kind of environment. Now, when we talk about the seniors, yes, they've gone up a lot, but, you know, I just looked at the XAU, which is, you know, the index of U.S. leading U.S. gold and silver stocks. You know, the yield of 1.7% is pretty much the highest, other than 2012-13, the highest in the last 20 years. A high yield means low valuation. You look at the price earnings multiple, we're close to the lowest in 20 years. So on valuation basis, on a valuation basis, if the companies continue to deliver, that's a different topic, then the valuations are still very, very close to their lows. And I think there's a lot further to go in the gold stocks, both in terms of price and in terms of valuation. So I don't think it's too late to be in the seniors by any means. But I do think one can start to, you know, pick away at the better quality. Well, at the juniors that either have a catalyst, because when there's a catalyst, they are responding, right? Or at the better quality ones that have, you know, good balance sheets, and we don't have to worry about them constantly raising money and diluting. So I definitely think we can, you know, we can start putting more money to work with the juniors, no question.
Well, Adrian, when you look at the dynamics of inflation and how that's affected the producers, it has caused their cost inputs to go up. So the narrative last year was also that, hey, their margins are being compressed, even though the pricing was still pretty good in gold and silver. But now we're seeing the pricing move higher again, which should help their margins. Are you attracted by that aspect of the producers? Do you like that the royalty companies don't really have to deal with that? Or do you like going down the food chain a little bit more into some of the development projects that and the exploration projects that will feed the industry? What area or sectors really have your attention right now?
Well, I was going to say yes to your question. Yes to all of them. You know, I'm a big proponent of the royalty companies for the reasons you mentioned. A, they don't have to worry about cost inflation, and B, the other important point, of course, is that they're typically far more diversified than the major. You can look at a major mining company that might have 8 or 9 projects. You look at Franco-Nevada, it's got revenue from 40 projects. So much more diversified, and simply because of that diversification, lower risk. As I mentioned, evaluations on the seniors are still very, very compelling. So, you know, I like some of the biggest of the big miners. And then, you know, the developers and the smaller producers, we've got to see more takeovers. I mean, we're seeing it. It's increasing, as you know, especially after COVID travel restrictions have ended and people can do more due diligence. We're beginning to see more takeovers, but that trend is only going to continue. And then again, you look at some of the exploration companies that are simply, there's no blue sky premium in the sector as a whole. So, you know, I think you can get into some of these things if you're patient, very cheaply. So, I mean, in answer to your question, yes, I'm looking at all of them. I'm still putting more money into the larger and smaller royalties and into the senior producers. I'm still putting more money into those than I have traditionally. I still think that's the best place to be in the near term for both a risk and a reward. Because, you know, we can talk about the inflows into gold. Let's face it, most institutional investors today are still extremely underweight gold. Extremely underweight. And when they move into gold in any way, they're going to buy bullion, they're going to buy the index, and they're going to buy, you know, Barrick and Newmont and Franco. They're not going to buy Ajax Exploration. So those are the sectors, those are the subsectors that will move first. We'll continue to move, I should say. No question in my mind.
All right. Well, Adrian, before we get you out of here then, any stocks that you care to share with us or further trading strategies, please?
The other thing I'm looking at is when there's a good quality company whose stock gets hit for some temporary reason or an exaggerated hit. And two examples I'll give just recently, Osisko Mining, you know, Osisko Gold Royalties, rather, OR New York, they came out with a very large equity raise. And the stock fell sharply. That often happens. It's not unusual for a stock to fall when there's a bought deal at a discount to the market and the stock fell below the price of the offering. That's not unusual. But it's an opportunity for people who've been watching the stock to jump back in. little bit, it's moved back up today, so I'm not buying it today, but that's a good example. Another good example would be Fortuna Silver. You know, they had a pretty darn good quarter and a pretty darn good year, and yet they missed their headline earnings because of exceptional factors, both because of losses on some hedges, but they had, the hedges were on tin and zinc, and they also hedged their diesel, the diesel hedges. So, you know, and that was a positive because, of course, they buy diesel. So selling it, buying it at a lower price was a positive. But if you look at the base metals that they hedged, you know, they lost some of the upside. I'm not upset about them hedging their byproducts, frankly. They don't hedge gold and silver. But that meant that they, and then there were some tax issues and some foreign exchange issues. So the headline earnings was a miss, small miss, and everybody dumps the stock. You know, it's just automatic for some of these firms. You know, someone misses their earnings by a penny, sell the stock. And let's look at why they missed later. So very good opportunity to buy a company like Fortuna. And we're still buying that today, by the way. But so I'm looking at things like that. And those happen, you know, every week of the year. There's some company but whose stock drops for some temporary reason.
All right, Adrian, we'll wrap it up here, but I really like your comment that there is no blue sky premium in the sector, because you're right, there is no blue sky premium, and quite frankly, even assets in the ground are still getting valued quite low. It just seems like there are a lot of million-plus ounce resources out there that just aren't getting the value, so we'll see when that money does start to trickle lower. Either way, Adrian, great having you on the show. Always a pleasure chatting with you. We'll have you back on probably next month. But again, thank you for kicking off this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you to the listeners.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.